I got my peaches out in Georgia.
Ooh, yeah. Welcome to Leaf Lunch on TSN 1050. Julie Tesheri, Al's brother Mike DiStefano with you as always. Big news this morning, AB. Team Canada announced, after being kind of awkwardly leaked yesterday, but we have an official Team Canada roster, and of note for Leafs fans, Josh Hosang makes the cut.
Yeah, which is, I think we were hoping that that would be the case, and a lot of people kind of not understand, like, he's not signed to an NHL contract, right? So he's allowed to go to the Olympics because it's just an AHL deal. So that's really exciting to see Josh Hosang get an opportunity. I think Owen Power, who is making waves at the World Juniors this year, he makes the team, along with Mason McTavish, another one who did some good things. And then Devin Levi making it as a young goaltender, young up-and-coming Canadian goaltender who could end up winning the Hobie Baker in the college ranks, and remember what he did a couple of years back for Team Canada at the World Juniors. So there's a good blend. Eric Staal is another name that we haven't mentioned, but I this is an interesting team. It's an interesting team.
Who do you have circled, AB, as someone you're excited to watch at the Olympics? I almost said the World Juniors.
Probably I would say, like, I want to see Owen Power again.
Nice.
I think this kid's a stud. Like, I really do. So to see him on the grand stage like that, I think I'd be really excited to see him. Jack McBain, another young college kid who's a Minnesota Wild prospect. I'm excited to see what he could bring to the table. And what about, you know, what about some journeyman type of guy like Eddie Pascal, the goaltender? For years he was in the Winnipeg Jets organization, and, you know, now he's over playing in Europe and getting an opportunity to show off his skills on the national stage. So it's going to be fun.
I'm pretty hot and heavy on Mason McTavish. I think he had 5 points in 2 games played at the World Juniors, and those couple games he were able to play. Same thing with his first couple games with Hamilton after he was traded from Peterborough, 5 points in 2 games. He looked like a man among boys at the World Juniors, so I think it'll be interesting to see him play among actual men, you know what I mean? I guess he has already at the NHL stage, but big fan of Mason McTavish. In Leafs news, AB, we talked about it a bit on yesterday's show. Bombshell. Can we call it a bombshell? The Leafs really, and Sheldon Keefe, really put the lines in a blender. So many people making Bobby Margarita jokes about the blender. We'll add one into the mix. But total kind of reconfiguration of the lines. Sheldon Keefe talked about it. I'll tell you what they are before we get into this and play Sheldon's quote. So top line looks like Bunting, Matthews, Kasha. Second line looks like Mikheyev, Tavares, Marner. Third line looks like Kerfoot, Kampf, Nylander, of note, Nylander on the third line. And Keefe talked about this, and he said he's really trying to spread out the lineup. You know what, Chris, I want to actually ruin it. Let's play the Sheldon Keefe clip.
Well, it's really just something I've been wanting to get a look at for quite some time here now, really dating all the way back to training camp. We haven't been healthy, and it's really, for me, it's about having Matthews, Marner, and Nylander on three separate lines. And getting a look at what that looks like for both our team and how the opposition might look to contend with that. But yes, really since training camp and exhibition games, I've been wanting to get a look at something like that. And we were planning coming out of the Christmas break and all our COVID issues with a look like this, but just haven't been healthy enough.
Isn't that incredible? Not incredible. Incredible is the wrong word. But isn't it crazy that this is kind of the lineup that he's wanted to have a look at since training camp, but just hasn't had the personnel to put it on the ice?
No, right? Because, I mean, right away, Ilya Mikheyev gets hurt and he goes down, so he wasn't available to this team. And then you obviously had Austin Matthews the first few games. He was rehabilitating his wrist a little bit. You didn't quite know what you had in Michael Bunting and Andre Kasha, and, you know, you weren't sure what you were going to get from some of these other guys. But here we are, about midway point of the season almost, and everyone's finally healthy in the forward group. I think the only guy who really isn't here right now is Jake Muzzin, who's skating but might not be ready to go for Wednesday's game. But you look at this lineup, and it is interesting. I think you look at the depth that this now has, and, you know, you didn't mention the fourth line, but like Engvall, Spets, and Simmons, when that fourth line has been together, they've been really effective. You know, the speed of Pierre Engvall really helps elevate the play of Spets and Simmons. You hope Nylander, the way that he can be puck dominant, can really help that third line create some scoring depth there, and then obviously Mikheyev scoring at a good clip. I think putting Marner on the line with Tavares, is to get JT going. Like, he's somebody who's struggled a little bit here lately, especially since coming back from COVID or from the Christmas break. You get Marner on that line, I think hopefully that is the missing ingredient that they're hoping gets Tavares going. And then we already know that Bunting, Matthews, and Kasha work really well together, because when Marner was out with his injury, that line was clicking. Like, that really, they were a solid, solid line. And we're trying to figure out how we could get more minutes for Andre Kasha. And now that he's back off the COVID list, he's going to be rewarded with some top line minutes. And I'm excited to see what this lineup can do. This 12 guys, this is the nucleus of players that Sheldon Keefe believes are the 12 best. And we're going to get a good look against the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow night. See how it all works out.
I'm excited for that game. Should be fun with this exciting young Ducks team in town. And whenever the Leafs don't play for like 2 days, I'm like, oh, like SpongeBob when he's out of water, deprived of like joy and fun in this life.
Water.
Yeah, that's what I feel like when the Leafs haven't played for 2 days.
Leafs. Give
content.
Me Leafs.
Content. Yeah, that should be really interesting. I feel like I had something else to say about that, but I'm not sure what it was. So we'll move on. Yesterday.
Got distracted by all the SpongeBob talk.
I did. We're going to have Cheryl Pounder on in the next couple minutes, and we're going to make her give us her favorite SpongeBob quote. But before we get to that, the Canucks. More good news. Like, the Canucks are just kind of on a roll lately. Hey, Amy? Yeah. Emily Castonguay becomes the first female assistant GM in Canucks history. She's the second woman in NHL history to have the role. Angela Gargone was the AGM with the Mighty Ducks during the 96-97 season. Isn't it weird that hockey did a bunch of like fun progressive things in the 90s and then like backed off for a couple decades, and now they're inching their way back towards it?
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of interesting.
Just really qualified. She played D1 in the States. She got her law degree. She's a player agent. Some of her biggest clients are Alexis Lafreniere, Marie-Philippe Poulin. She gets kind of all the big prospects out of Quebec. And Chris, can we play the audio on what she had to say yesterday in her first appearance as AGM for the Canucks?
The conversations that I've had with Vancouver We never even talked about the fact that I was a woman. When Jim called, it was about, I think you can fill this role and I think you can be great at it. And we never even spoke about that, not once. And I just didn't feel, and I never felt, you know, I've known Jim through different interactions in my career, but I just felt like what he wanted was quality people with quality vision and that could have a quality impact. And he thought that I was one of those people. So for me, if I would have thought that it was, like you said, to check a box or, you know, to have a PR move, I would have felt that from a mile away. I can tell you that much. And so I never had that feeling while I was talking to Vancouver. And yeah, I guess that's part of the reason also why I made this move.
I always find like the checkmark argument so hilarious, because like Kent, like the Canadians just hired a former player GM, or a player agent as their GM, and she's an AGM. I saw a tweet last night. I was telling you about this, but it was just hilarious. It was like, when a girl gets hired, is she qualified to work in hockey? And then when a guy gets hired, he played on our blue line for 20 years. He could definitely run our $80 million budget.
Yeah, that's funny.
Let's bring in Cheryl Pounder, two-time Olympic gold medalist, six-time world champion, and analyst for TSN. Cheryl, how's it going?
Hello, you two. It's going pretty well. The kids are back at school, so Cheryl is quite happy.
That's good. That's good. Lots of wins. Cheryl, yeah. We were just talking about Emily Castonguay becoming the first female assistant GM in Canucks history. How significant is this hiring, and what does it mean for women in the sport going forward? I always love to take these strides.
Well, first of all, it's fantastic. I mean, you just heard her speak about it being about quality and the impact that she can have. And I just love that she says that. There was also a quote that she said, if you have the knowledge, you've done the work, there's a place for you. And so, irrelevant of gender, yes, she's the one breaking the glass ceiling here. But in essence, she's qualified. She's done the work. She's been the player. She's been on both sides of it with representation, representing some huge names in both the women and the male game. She's done the business degree, the law. You know, she's done every angle of this, and she's ready for it. So she belongs there. So it's certainly it was a great day to get the news that she She is going to be the assistant GM with Vancouver. And of course, you know, she talked about her vision board. And I think this is fantastic when you talk to your kids, male or female, that, listen, you have to have aspirations. You have to believe, but there's a process and you got to do the work. You got to put in the time. You have to be articulate. You have to be smart. And she does have all of that under her name with her pedigree. So a big and huge congratulations goes out to her.
One of the things that, and I was really impressed listening to her talk in her interview, I guess, yesterday, or her press conference yesterday. But one of the things that I legitimately got chills about was, and I'm not sure if you listened to this, but she was talking about how this was kind of manifested, and her sister, you know, before she passed away, said, "You are going to work for the Vancouver Canucks." And the fact that this is, you know, this is where she gets her big, you know, step in the NHL, become the AGM there, to me was just like, it literally gave me chills and like goosebumps.
Well, I always think, you know, sometimes, you know, when you walk through life, you can second guess yourself, you can be intimidated, and it's always great to have people, as you know, who support you, and you get those words of encouragement, everyone in their life, or hopefully, you know, or every individual knows that there's always someone in their corner, even if you aren't necessarily looking there. And it sounds like her sister just knew, had this innate sense that she just had that certain something. And I think you see that in some people, you know, they have an energy, people gravitate towards them, a keen sense of the game and awareness. And her sister, from the sounds of it, knew that. And when you have someone sort of in your corner that can sort of resonate that belief in you, it brings you back to three words that Cassie Campbell Pascal once told me when I started on the broadcasting journey. And that was, believe you belong. And I think that is so critical. And it sounds like she has the confidence. She's been on both sides of the desk, if you will, to be able to negotiate. So she's got that maturity. She's got that confidence and the strength to believe, you know, to be able to stand up to what she believes in and the conviction and the knowledge that she has to back it up. So it seems that her sister sort of knew that and kind of was always on her side, if you will, standing on her shoulder on the good side saying, hey, you got this. And it sounds like it's what it's turned out to be. So I'm sure there'll be some growth throughout this process for Emily, but I mean, it just a significant day for her and a deserved day.
Yeah, absolutely. In conversation with Cheryl Pounder, two-time Olympic gold medalist and also a TSN hockey analyst. And the Canadian Olympic team was just announced here this morning. Josh Hosang.
Yep.
Going to be repping Team Canada in Beijing. He's got 20 points in 27 games with the Marlies, along with all the other duties that you do. You've also covered the Marlies this season as well. You know, what can Canada be expecting from this guy?
Well, you know what? I think it's just a testament to Josh Hosang, you know, coming into tryouts with the Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously looking to hit that reset button, having 53 games in the NHL with the Islanders, and just willing to do whatever it would take to sort of get that sniff back playing professional hockey. And I think with the Toronto Marlies, he's kind of, you know, checked the boxes. He's looked good on the ice. Obviously, we know what his skill set is. I mean, his hands are unbelievable. He has the ability to create space. Sometimes I think he works so quickly in creating that space that others have difficulty reading off him. I mean, he's a skilled guy. He's a skater and a guy that can put the pucks in the net. He's coming off a career season in the AHL with 11 goals behind him. So I think there's a lot of confidence there and just that message to Josh Hosang that we think you can be part of this team. The culture of this team as well, I think, sends a big message given sort of the history that he has gone through. And I'm sure Greg Moore and the Marlies and everyone's just thrilled. And they have to let him go, right? They have to let him go to be a part of this team, which is going to be tough, not having a guy in your lineup who can really create speed through the length of the ice, in particular on the power play. But I think we're expecting him to show that ability to move a puck and the ability to just create some space with his hands. So he's really creative, and I've had a pleasure of watching him play with the Marlies this season.
And hopefully he brings the robot to the international hockey
yes,
stage.
Yes,
that's what I'm hoping for.
I say.
Gotta
have it. Looking for that, for sure.
Definitely. He's definitely a good Sally guy. Cheryl, I saw Hillary Knight's stories. The Americans are already on their way to Beijing. At the Women's Worlds this summer, lots of Team Canada's rookies really burst onto the scene. Which of these young players are you most looking forward to seeing make their Olympic debut?
Well, you know, there's so many great stories on this women's national team, whether it's Poulin and her overtime electricity that she brings as the greatest clutch player in any game. But when you look at sort of the back end as well as up front, I mean, you have to talk about Sarah Filliere. I think she's just broken onto the international stage with such a boom. I mean, so much, there was so much hype about this young athlete, and she delivered on every side of the ice. I can talk endlessly about her ability to move left to right, her crossover speed, but it's more the IQ for her. You know, the ability to just get the D to turn their toe. She'll take one stride outside of the dot just to get them to turn and say, yeah, thank you so much for that lane. Here you go, Daou, or here you go, Spoons. Why don't you fill it, right? You were the fill the spoon line, wasn't it, at the Women's World? But I think that, you know, she's a player that can be a real difference maker on this team. The ability to score goals. She led the rivalry series with 5. So that just has to tell you something right there. But not just scoring goal scores goal, not afraid to get to the paint, the dirty areas. And we're seeing that with her as well. But you know, you also have players on the back end making her Olympic debut. You have to talk about Erin Ambrose. I think she's just a great story. She's been a part of this national team for a number of years, however, is still seeking that first Olympic title, the ability to represent Canada at the Olympic Winter Games. She'll quarterback the power play. She didn't make it in 2018. She was a late cut. She's talked about that at length and sort of showing that resilience, be back on the blue line, and just an athlete that doesn't put herself in vulnerable positions. She makes a good first pass, a little bit of a simple game, but real good on the offensive blue line. So excited to watch her, although many people have probably heard her name. And of course, you have to talk about Jamie Lee Rattray. I mean, how much more can she do for this team to provide impact and get limited minutes? But she didn't even centralize back in 2018. So although these players aren't the younger ones, I'm certainly expecting them to be key difference makers in this lineup. And Jamie Lee can be versatile and play right through line 1 through 4. And I think we know what she can do when she gets a little bit of time to create some energy, and she can switch the energy if needed to in a game.
Does this Olympics feel like a big moment for women's hockey? It feels like a bit of a turning point with no NHLers going. There could be a chance to have more focus and attention on the women's side of things.
Yeah, you know, hockey is hockey, and I just, there's so many eyes on the game come Olympic time, and it needs to be a time where the eyes are on these women and the men. I think when we look at the stories on the other side, I mean, I heard you guys talking about Owen Power and Mason McTavish and Eric Staal, all these guys from veterans to youthful energy guys who are the best outside of the NHL and who will be mainstays in the NHL. But there is no league at current time, one unified league for these women to play in. And so coming out of these Olympics is more of what I want to see. You know, the opportunities that come out from all of these eyes being on them, watching the rivalries unfold and the speed and the pace of the game and these women that train full-time best on best. And that's what this tournament is for them. It is best on best. I mean, Canada's bubbled right now. They've been bubbled since they got back from their Christmas break. And living in a hotel is not always the most comfortable thing, and playing a lot of video games. But, you know, this is the sacrifice. They want to be there, no family and friends, but they want to put on the best product, not just for their country, but for the young, the girls, for the opportunity for tomorrow. So for me, you know, being a part of the broadcast of these games, I'm really excited to see just the talent, the display of the rivalries, and of course, that final culmination of best on best, which I think we all look forward to and really expecting millions and millions of eyes on them. So exactly where they should be, and really looking forward to the energy that Canada is going to give them at this time when we all need it, right? We all need the optimism and the hope of sport. And I think that the Olympics can really infuse that into our homes right now.
And the vengeance for 2018, even though you don't know what to lose at the Olympics, Cheryl. You only win at Olympics.
Well, listen, I certainly remember that one of the things I miss the most out of playing is actually, you know, staring at the Americans on the blue line. You know, that when you line up before the game, you know, everyone always asks me, what do you miss the most? And it's funny that's one of the moments that I miss the most, is just standing there, sort of that anxiousness, but that positive anxiousness, the butterflies right before the game where you know, you're going to go toe to toe with the best in the world. And it makes it the greatest competition, because every time
they step on the ice, you know this is a game. We look back to Vancouver 2010 or 2014 Sochi. So many people remember the goalpost, right? The goalpost. And then 2018 a shootout. I mean, just when you think it can't get any better, it does. And you know, there's the dark horse. There's Finland jumping into this as well. So controversial news, Nuoratu being left off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of youthful energy there with a strategic mind in Pasi Mustonen, who will be looking for his moment. Very opportunistic man and coach to be able to get his team to try and buy for that final game. So I think there's lots to look forward to and a lot of great storylines with a lot of young players entering these Olympic Winter Games for the first time.
Last one for you, Cheryl, before we let you go here. As a former defenseman yourself, I think I get a quick Leafs question in here since
yep.
Leafs lunch. Sandy and Lillard, they look really good defensively this season in the third pair role. But then with injuries to kind of Muzzin and Hall this week, they were made the de facto second pair, had to move up into the lineup. It didn't go as well. As a former defenseman yourself, like, what's that like? What makes it more difficult to perform on that second pair than is the third? Is the game change? Is a mindset change for a player? Like, what do you think factored into the struggles there for those, you know, two young guys?
Well, listen, I was nothing like a Sandin. I had zero hands, and right, I was never in the offense. I was a shutdown, you know, typically just to shut down the opponent's top line. And so I think it's very different. You know, when you're playing against top six guys, and that's traditionally what's going to happen here when you're in a second pairing. And so the skill set is often different. The in tight, the speed of the game, the ability to move that puck in tight spaces with speed, and just taking that puck out side of the dot a little bit to get you to move outside positionally. It puts you in more of a vulnerable spot, and you can see bigger defensive lapses, and that's what happens. And so learning to gauge how you skate the game, how you keep the game in front of you, your first three strides in transition have to be real strong, and all of these things can be learned. Certainly when you have more time and space with the puck, you have that free flowing, the more time to be able to move it on a zone exit. And often, you know, sometimes clearing it, just getting it high hard off the glass is the key to the game for you when you know that you're up against a real tough unit or you're under siege. So I think it is learned. It's certainly different with the time and space you do get, but just the movement, getting, you know, these top players that get you to move in the ice the where they want you to move. And so it becomes very difficult learning that, where to stay on the ice to keep yourself in the middle, to deflect to the perimeter, to allow back pressure to get back and help out. So all of these things become part of playing those top 4 minutes. And so I think it's learned. I think opportunity gives you experience, which also gives you opportunity to learn how to play it. And it does take a little more time to be able to transition into that. And think about going back for a puck, right? You're going back for a puck and someone's right on your tail, as opposed to having a little more time to make a decision. So knowing where you want to put it ahead of time, a quick close support pass, all of those things become really critical. So I think it's a little bit different. I think it takes a little more time, which is why you see a little bit more of the lapses, whether it's off the rush or whether it's in tight defending the net.
And practice makes perfect. So hopefully those two get there as they get a little bit more opportunities as they progress.
Yeah.
Still insanely young defensemen.
Yeah, when you think about it, when you've only got 100+ games
right,
between the
exactly.
two of you in the NHL, there's the body of work. You need more of a body of work there as well. But they've been working. I'm watching practice, been down at Ford Performance. So there's been a lot of good stuff going on there as well.
All right, Cheryl, we got to let you go, but I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Thanks, you too. Have a great one.
All right, you as well. There she goes, Cheryl Pounder, former Canadian Olympian, TSN hockey analyst, and one of the beauties of the hockey world we have come to find out. She really is like just a rock
star. Truly a beauty.
Like just a rock star. And I got a text from my cousin. He watches, he's a Sens fan. He's like, I really love Cheryl Pounder. I'm like, what?
She's awesome.
He's like, I'm watching this panel, and like she just kills it. I'm like, yeah, she is. She's really, really killing it. And once again right there. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. We can go to break. I was going to tell a story about me and Cheryl eating way too many pogos at the Women's Worlds, but we don't have any time for that.
No, we got to go. We got Darren Dreger. Darren Dreger coming up next, and we're a little worried about Darren when we let him sift on the line a little bit too much. So we'll get to Darren Dreger. So we'll do that next. I'm Mike DiStefano, Al's brother. She's Jewett DeSherry. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
It's so easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace, LeaseBusters. Avoid penalties and early termination. Go to LeaseBusters.com. Let's bring in Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. Dregs, how's it going?
It's going. Second week in a row. We've shoveled a foot and a half of snow, but got through that early this morning. Got everybody out the door and where they needed to go. So
I didn't get hit that bad in the city. Nice. You got a lot of snow? Are you a little bit north, Dregs?
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn, Ontario.
See,
so
I'm trying to get an exact location so we can get an invite to your cold crowd that you described to us last week.
We got a ton of snow.
Okay. Dregs, Canada's Olympic team announced this morning. Big story of the day. I'm sure that you knew the roster beforehand, but what are your initial reactions and your overall thought on the rosters?
Yeah. Well, look, I think I'm as intrigued as most Canadian hockey fans would be, right? You don't know. You know, you recognize some of the names. You look at Eric Staal, who's trying to claw his way back into the NHL at a brief stint in the American League before being scooped up by Team Canada. I mean, on that stage against the level of experience at the NHL level, he's probably going to be a player of impact. David Desharnais up front, again, another recognizable National Hockey League name. Josh Hosang, if you're a fan of the Toronto Marlies, continues to work his way back into pro hockey, and this could be a stepping stone for him to be able to do that. And you know, then I look at Ray Ferraro's son Landon. What a great story this is, right? He's been playing in Germany and having good success there. And you know, not his fault that the National Hockey League and Players Association decided to pull away from the Olympic Games. But he's going to enjoy it. He's going to represent his country and do the best that he can. And then you look at some of the younger pieces, Mason McTavish. You know, who didn't want to see more of him at the World Junior Championships? You know, he is an NHL-ready young player. He just is. I don't think that he's going to have any problem being an impactful piece for Team Canada in China. And then defensively, I don't think you have to look beyond Owen Power. He was key in Canada winning gold at the men's Worlds, would have been key at Canada challenging for gold at the World Junior. And I think that, again, he's going to be heavily leaned on despite the fact that he's a young defenseman. So I'm intrigued. I think it's a good balance between, you know, the youth, a little bit of former NHL experience, and some guys that we really haven't heard a lot of late.
Yeah, I guess the question is, like, what name shocked you the most that it did make the team and is there? And what name kind of shocked you that isn't going to be on the team?
Yeah, you know, Mike, I don't really have a name that bounces off the page. Dubnyk, maybe Devin Dubnyk as a goaltender. Yeah. I mean, they've gone with Levi, they've gone with Pasquale, and they've gone with Matt Tompkins. Didn't see enough of Devin Dubnyk just through lack of playing time, right? So that's why I hesitate. It's not really shocking to me. When I look at the goaltending, I wonder, again, not knowing a whole lot about these guys and what the rest of the field is going to look like. That's the other thing here. You know, it's not like Scott Salmon and Claude Julien and Shane Doan, who have essentially put this team together, you know, aren't aware of what's going on around the world with some of the other federations. And they have worked incredibly hard in putting this roster together. And it was a huge boost for both the men and the women, all the federations really, to have the size of the traveling party expanded by six players, right? So you still have a 25-person roster, but you can bring an extra six in case players get injured or, you know, God forbid, in China, somebody tests positive and has COVID. You know,
right.
That becomes a more significant issue. So it's less about the surprises of who is there and who isn't there, and again, more about wondering, well, the Russians are always a heavily favored team. You know, what have they got kind of stashed away in the KHL or in varying parts of the world that the rest of us aren't in tune with? You know, hey, I'll throw a name out there because I've talked about it on air before, and that's Andrei Kuzmenko. You know, he's an undrafted forward playing in the KHL with St. Petersburg, highly sought after by NHL clubs. You know, I'm sure the Toronto Maple Leafs have kicked tires. Ottawa has been, again, we've talked about it, has been most vocal in establishing their interest. So how good is this guy? You know, he's in his mid-20s. We're going to find out on the Olympic stage. That's a big part of what he wants to do. He wants to win Olympic gold, wants to win gold at the men's world, and he wants to win the Gagarin Cup. And then he'll look at his NHL options. So beyond Canada and the United States, to me, that's the draw of the Olympic stage, you know, going into the event. It doesn't have the polish that it would have had. It doesn't have the main draw of having NHL stars competing in a best-on-best, but there's going to be some quality hockey here, and Team Canada should go in as a favored team, but are they the top team going in? I'm not prepared to say that either.
Yeah,
We should
also note that former Leafs prospect Justin Poggi was one of those interesting random names that got bounced around and is going to be an alternate. That was one that kind of surprised me. I'm sitting there, I'm like, Justin Poggi, I didn't even know he's still playing. It's just funny how some of these guys, they kind of, you know, they're not playing in North America anymore, but they still go over to Europe and they still continue to play hockey and have a pro career. And next thing you know, you end up on the Canadian Olympic team.
Yeah, look, I mean, they don't have e-bugs at the Olympic Games. So, again, given the shift in double IHF ruling and protocol yesterday, allowing them to bring those six extra players, you know, Poggi gets an invite. Kent Johnson, a young player, is an alternate and can play unless there is an injury or COVID hits. But, you know, even though carrying three goaltenders sounds like it should be enough, how can you be sure? So you got to make sure that you are covered in all areas.
Yeah, Vancouver Canucks know that three might not be enough right now. Go ahead, Julia.
Dregs, I just want to circle back to Josh Hosang quickly. If you're a Leafs fan, you probably have him circled as someone who will be interesting to watch at these upcoming Olympics. He's had a great year with the Marlies, but what have you made of his, just kind of the rehabilitation of his image this year? I just find it so impressive how he's totally been able to turn this whole narrative around about himself around.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but, you know, he took ownership, right?
Yeah.
And knew that he was likely going to get phased out of pro hockey, let alone the National Hockey League, if he didn't take ownership and help rebuild his game. Less about what goes on away from the game. A lot of that can be exaggerated, even though, you know, his issues with the New York Islanders specifically have been well documented, but that's history, right? He's entitled to second, third chances, whatever it is. And he had a terrific camp with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he earned his opportunity with the Toronto Marlies. And based on the few times I've checked on him, there's been nothing but, you know, good things said about Josh Hosang, both in terms of how he's taken on his role on and off the ice with the Toronto Marlies, and how committed he remains to trying to get his way back into NHL consideration. And, you know, as long as he continues to play the way he has, and maybe this is a stepping stone, he has a decent Olympic appearance, then why wouldn't NHL clubs take a look at him? He's not a 35-year-old man. Like, he still has plenty of game. And, you know, if you want to call it maturity, and that might be unfair, I don't know Josh at all, but if there were any issues off ice, well, that's clearly now behind him. So he deserves another look, you know, provided the hockey is there and managers see that, you know, he might be at worst a depth add for them in the future.
In conversation with TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger. Dregs, we saw yesterday Emily Castonguay hired in Vancouver as the assistant general manager. It seems like the GM search is still underway. A bit of a different course of action that Jim Rutherford's taking. Ended up kind of filling out the staff before getting to the GM position, which is a little bit out of order, you could say.
Did we lose AB?
What you're hearing about any candidates for the GM position?
Well, you broke up there for a sec, Mike, but I got the tail end of it, so I think I can go with it. I would expect that the Vancouver Canucks are going to name the general manager this week. You know, they've got a short list of 3, 4, 5 men. I believe that Patrick Alvin, who's with Pittsburgh, Jamie Rutherford knows him well, is on that list. Scott Mellenby, I believe, is on that list. I believe Sean Burke is on that list. These are men who have been interviewed at least twice. it is a little bit unusual that the president of hockey operations would try and more or less fill out his hockey operations department. A big hire yesterday, celebrated hire, deserved hire of Emily Castonguay as assistant general manager before naming the general manager. But the Vancouver Canucks made it pretty clear in the onset of this process that they were going to hire an entry-level general manager. And that's not belittling the position or the candidate who is successful in being named GM of the Vancouver Canucks. That's just acknowledging they want a fresh approach. They've got a very seasoned and experienced hockey man in Jim Rutherford. So, of course, he's going to be hands-on with management decisions, but he's also going to allow his general manager to make hockey operations decisions. He's not going to micromanage entirely, but he's going to be heavily involved. No different than Jeff Gorton with the Montreal Canadiens and now Kent Hughes as a freshly minted general manager in Montreal. So it is a little bit strange. But again, I think that more the timing of all of it is primarily the issue as to why Rutherford hasn't named his GM, but that'll happen this week.
We'll flip to some Leafs stuff for a moment here, Dregs, on Leafs Lunch. We've been kind of all over the place. I was saying to AB before we came on, when the Leafs don't play for 2 days, I feel like at a loss for content. I'm just sad. But the Leafs juggled lines at practice yesterday, split up that big three. Do you see this as another example of Keith kind of using the regular season to try different things out before the playoffs? You really stuck with Matthews and Marner versus the Habs, even though we know how that went.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And look, I think it's a way of freshening things up. They don't have a lot of practice time, but, you know, because of the schedule, because of the grind that the Maple Leafs and all Canadian teams, all clubs, are facing for the remainder of the season, I think it's important to test chemistry and freshen things up and maybe give the opposition a different look when you're healthy and you have an opportunity to do that. And what we know is what we've seen in the past. And we know that Matthews and Marner can be magic together. But John Tavares is pretty effective with Mitch Marner as well. So I don't see this or feel this as a big stretch or, you know, Sheldon acknowledging that there's something he doesn't like in his top six. That's why he's just juggling the line a little bit, the two lines. I think that this is just, you know, kind of testing chemistry and trying something different. If it works, great. But I don't think that if it works and both lines are successful, that that means he's locked and loaded on the change for the remainder of the season in the playoffs. I think it could very much be a matchup-driven perspective as well. You know, let's throw the odd curveball to mix in with a changeup and a fastball when required against some of the better teams that we're going to face. So this is just the coach utilizing his depth, particularly the star power he has available to him in his top nine.
Bit of a weird transition here at Dregs, but I think, you know, kind of got to discuss this a little bit. But is there any update in the CHL investigation into Jacob Panetta?
ECHL, pro hockey, yeah. Well, there was a hearing yesterday, as we're well aware of, and Jacob Panetta presented his defense to, you know, the discipline committee, I suppose, of the ECHL. I'm told that his former coach, because he was released by Jacksonville, his coach and the owner actually attended the hearing in support of Jacob Panetta. I'm also told that it makes sense, given that Panetta on social media, on his Twitter account, has submitted a couple of video clips showing where he used that gesture, the Tom Wilson meme, if you will, the tough guy flex, which is really the essence of his defense. He presented that to the discipline committee by way of saying, look, I've done this before. I did it against this very team when Jordan Subban wasn't in the lineup. So he is obviously trying to eradicate any sense that his gesture was racially motivated. Now it's up to the ECHL discipline committee to say, all right, we understand, we appreciate your defense, and we accept it, we support it. I have no idea which direction this is going to go. You know, on social media earlier today, I retweeted a story from Michael Tracos, who interviewed Jacob Panetta. I believe he posted his story in the Toronto Sun last night. retweeted it. I think Ken Campbell also wrote something similar. And likewise, I retweeted Jacob Panetta. I just think that there's due process that needs to be observed here, right? And if Jacob Panetta is found guilty, then he is going to have to take full responsibility for his actions and the punishment that goes along with it. But fair process needs to be observed. And I support fair process. And that's what I think everybody now is waiting for, to find out if the East Coast Hockey League believes the defense of Jacob Panetta to be true and to be heartfelt, or whether it's just a deflection. So we're going to have to wait and find out what they decide.
Yeah, it seems like a situation that's almost bigger than these two individuals who are involved here. It comes down to a lot of culture, and there's a lot of nuance involved, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Another situation that hockey fans are waiting on news for, Evander Kane, it was a name that was really hot in the news last week and then kind of cooled off as there's still some strings to be tied up. Do you have any news on that front?
Well, the National Hockey League is slowly wrapping up its investigation of, you know, the latest allegation of protocol breach. Now, you know, Evander Kane did test positive for COVID, and then whatever the timeline was, you know, crossed the border to go into Vancouver. And according to protocol, that was a breach. So the National Hockey League is now taking several days to sort through this. One of two things are going to happen. He's either going to get suspended again, coming off a 21-game suspension for protocol breach, or he will be cleared. And if he's cleared, I don't think that there's going to be much time wasted before Evander Kane signs with an NHL team. I know the Edmonton Oilers still remain strongly interested. There are other teams that have emerged, Florida, Tampa Bay, maybe the Washington Capitals. You know, go down the list. But first, you have to get by, you know, what the NHL decision is pending the conclusion of their investigation, and we should know that as early as tomorrow.
Well, Drex, we'll keep an eye on your Twitter account, as I'm sure you'll be breaking the news once it comes. Really appreciate you joining us, as always. We'll chat again next week.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. The Evander Kane situation is just kind of bizarre in and itself. You got to think this probably will, if he does get found as guilty, I mean, and he doesn't, he ends up with a suspension, who knows what that means for his career. But if he's found that, you know, he's cleared of any wrongdoing, I don't think we'll see too long before he's scooped up by an NHL team, as Drex just said.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. The Evander Kane situation has been, I don't know, I think a lot more will probably come to light about that in the next couple days, but
yeah.
A lot of off-ice sagas. The ECHL one is a difficult one, too, because what I said when Dregs was on the phone, he said, like, he's in for due process, and I'm totally in for due process, too. But I think where this becomes a bigger conversation is in hockey, who gets due process? You know what I mean? Like, who's afforded the luxury of having a second chance? And then it comes back to the grassroots conversation as well, because if you make that gesture as a white person, there's no racial implications to it. But it's understanding the nuance of why you can't do that gesture to a person of color. And I think that we're missing maybe that education on the grassroots level of hockey. So I think that this comes back to an issue of culture more than it comes to an issue of, like, one guy trying to be overtly racist, which I don't doubt that he probably wasn't.
Right.
But I've had some valuable conversations with Kayla Gray, whose opinion I really trust, Takiya Singh, who's on the Bar Down team, and a lot of this stuff is in the nuance, in the shades of gray. Like, overt racism is obviously taboo, but we've talked a lot about having difficult conversations and having all those chats, and I think this is one of them where we look at the situation and we're like, this is bigger than this, just this one incident that happened on the ice.
Yeah, I think it's correct. And often we see, though, so much we see, like, media and social media kind of shoot first, then ask questions last. And like Dreg was saying, he does have that due process to at least tell his side of the thing. Like, automatically people are coming out saying, this guy's a racist. How dare he make this gesture? It may turn out that he wasn't making the gesture that he was being accused of. But so often, everybody always shoots first, and then we find out later that there's more to the story. I don't know if that's the case here, and that's why you go through that due process. And I guess we'll see. But either way, you're right. I think the nuance and kind of the a little bit of an ignorance to the acts, even if it didn't, there's no meaning behind it. There's a little bit of ignorance there based on the situation.
We've heard a lot in the past year about how important it is to be anti-racist. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to just being passive. I think this is kind of one of those circumstances where this comes in. I think we should get this all out there because it's such a, it's important.
Well, I say we can talk about this more on the other side. Let's go. Take a break and then kind of get into a little bit more on the other side. We also have a clip John Tavares talked about the incident that we could play on the other side. So why don't we do that when we get back? I'm Mike DiStefano, Al's brother. She's Jewett DeSherry. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Before I take any questions, I just want to say a few things just on the few racial incidents that have happened in our game in the last little while. I think it's really important that to acknowledge, I think, the recognition of steps that have been taken over the last little while to improve eliminating racism in our game. But obviously, we have a lot of work to do with learning and discussion and understanding and how we can continue to apply that and make a difference. Just continue to make our game better and that much more inclusive. So I just thought it was important to acknowledge that today. Something we address as a team as well.
Tomorrow is Bell Let's Talk Day. On Bell Let's Talk Day, Bell will donate more towards mental health initiatives in Canada by contributing 5 cents for every applicable text, call, or social media interaction. We got a couple minutes left on Leafs Lunch here. Jewett DeSherry, Al's brother, Mike DiStefano, and that was John Tavares on the racist incidents that happened over the past weekend. You know what? No matter how that situation shakes down, I love that John Tavares was willing to address it, willing to understand that there's things that...
Unprompted.
Yeah, unprompted. Yeah. He went on to say Mark Fraser's brought a lot to the organization in terms of having these conversations. Impressed by him yesterday. Yeah, exactly. Simmons too, obviously.
Big part of the HDA. Yeah, so that was good on Tavares. That's a type of captain-like, you know, leadership you can
totally
see. Captain-like material there from JT. The big news on the day was that Team Canada announced their roster this morning. For just joining us, you can go and check it out. Some of the big names that are kind of there, you know, we saw Owen Power, another name that will be recognizable for those who are watching the World Juniors, as well as Devin Levi. But Eric Staal, I guess, the most highly decorated player of the group. I assume he'll wear the C like he did for many, many years in Carolina. And Eric Staal actually going to join the boys on Overdrive later today, I believe at 5 o'clock. So that'll be great. So make sure that you're tuned in for that. That's it for us today here today. If you missed any of the show, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Jewett DeSherry. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch Gameplay with Matt Cause next.